Hello, Blind Cool Tech listeners. This is David Law, and you're about to hear an Access Committee meeting that was recorded in downtown Denver at the Wellington Webb Building. I'm a part of the Denver Commission for People with Disabilities this summer, and will bring many more meetings and projects as they become available at my own website on www.gosight.com. GOSIGHT.com. Additional information about the ADA specifications and compliance can be found at ADAPortal.org. This is a heavily scaled version of the original meeting, but for brevity and to keep your interest, I made it short and to the point. Thank you for listening.
Other than that, Jeff, did you have anything else you want to present tonight?
Well, I mean, I could tell you, I don't know where your discussion has been in the past in terms of audible traffic signals and, you know, where the ADA, where the Rehab Act of 1973, where that stands. I'd be glad to discuss that, but I don't want to, you know, spend a lot of time rehashing something that's already been talked about. So what do you want? If you want, I can kind of give you an overview of the background on the subject. I don't have to go into all the technical specifications and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you make a we'll just make a short presentation tonight.
Okay, just briefly, the thing in simple terms, most of what people see in the ADA has to do with architectural design, in infrastructure. I mean, there's a little bit about protruding objects and stuff like that that deals with people who are blind or visually impaired. There's a brief section in the ADAG about detectable warnings and so on and so forth. But looking at the ADA in a little bit broader scope, Title II of the ADA, which deals with state and local governments, requires equal access to programs and services of public entities. And it also requires effective communication. Quite simply, and this was decided by the Federal Highway Administration in dealing with the state of Maryland's Highway Administration, that traffic signals are a service provided by a Title II entity which communicates information that provides traffic safety. And that information, if it's not accessible to people who are blind or visually impaired, is denying their right to access to equal effective communication and access to a program of public safety, which is that information given to sighted people by traffic signals. That's a pretty broad stroke right there. I mean, I can pick up the ADAG here and I can say there's nothing in here about audible traffic signals. But when you look at Title II of the ADA, and it says if a city or a state or a local government puts up a service that it has to be accessible to people with disabilities, I don't think there's any good argument for not providing that type of information at intersections. If you've got traffic signals there, then the information provided by them should be provided in a format that's accessible to people who are blind or visually impaired. And this is Federal Highway Administration, the Access Board, research done in the APS Synthesis Guide. This was done by the Transportation Research Board, the National Research Council, and the Federal Highway Administration. And pretty much everybody is on board at the federal level saying that this is if and when the public rights of way document that's out there with the Access Board is adopted as enforceable regulation, it's going to be no questions asked. At this point in time, we're talking best practices in the industry in order to provide access, safe access to pedestrian routes for people who are blind or visually impaired.
Is there any standards that apply to whether it be a two-way intersection in terms of like two lanes, three lanes, four lanes? Is there a rubric that's set up to say if it's going to be a significant danger to cross this area, we're going to put one in here, but not over there?
At this point, no. The main the main application of audible traffic signals, as the history indicates, I mean, there have been audible traffic signals going back to the 1920s in areas where there have been schools for the deaf and blind. I mean, that's kind of a, you know, been a given. The issue now is kind of along the lines of, if you live in a neighborhood where you're in a wheelchair and you don't have curb ramps, you call up the city and you say, hey, I can't get off my block, I can't get to the bus station, you got to come out here and do it. And, you know, the city better get out there and do it, or you file a complaint with the Department of Justice. In terms of people trying to get audible traffic signals, generally that's the process that's been in place, is where there's a need for one, somebody has had to go and complain and say, we're just not safe crossing the street without audible traffic signals. And the thing is, the intent of the ADA would be to make basically independent access to our cities and to, you know, all the facilities in our cities pretty much a given, okay?
What kind of cost is that to install on it?
Actually, in terms of putting traffic lights in, if you're doing a new intersection, I've heard varying costs, but I've heard everything from essentially nothing to up to maybe $3,000. Typically, to put traffic lights up at an intersection costs somewhere, all in all, usually total work between $75,000 and $150,000. The cost of putting audible traffic signals is really negligible. The basic reason that it's taken this long to move this forward has been the debate within the blind community between essentially ACB and NFB over whether or not to have these.
This is absolutely ridiculous.
I have two concerns about audible traffic signals. Mm-hmm. First of all, they don't work for certain blind people. And you're forcing me as a low vision person to use something that I don't need and is actually dangerous for me. But they're dangerous for me.
Since all audible traffic signals are a choice to use,
That's not true.
Well,
I was in Salt Lake City recently, and they went off, period.
Okay, some places they do, that's true.
But, and that, to me, was intrusive and actually dangerous, because here I'm walking across the street, I hear this buzzing and this beeping. It interferes with my hearing, which I use to listen to traffic, and I almost walk right into a path of a train. Now, is that safe?
Well, there was a train in the middle of...
Yeah, there's trains in the middle of their streets, yeah. Their streets are pretty wide.
Well, then apparently they haven't got their audible signals cued right. And the other problem is, because there's been so much of a battle over this, nobody's settled on what's a standard to be used. Mm-hmm. If a consistent standard was used, I mean, you go around, some places have got the cuckoo and chirp system, some places have just got a buzzer that buzzes. There's not a consistent standard. But there is technical information now. The access board's got recommendations. There are other best practices out there.
Even in Boulder, there's different audibles. There's like a buzz or a chirp or...
Yeah, I've heard ones that actually announce the intersection
The ones that are being recommended now will announce which street. They have vibral tactile, which means that an arrow that you touch, you push the button, and it tells you by pointing to the crosswalk that you can access.
Yeah, that's $500 per corner for that system.
Have you investigated using the talking signs so that way a person
would have to have a receiver?
Would have to have a receiver, but that can be easily handled through grants or whatever. That would be something, for example, Bill could choose to use, and I could choose not to use.
Okay. In most locations where these are used, they don't actually work unless you push the button for the crosswalk sign. And in that case, if somebody wants to use it, they can push it. If you don't want to use it, you don't have to. I confess, I mean, you're the first person I've heard, and I've talked with a lot of groups of blind people, you're the first person I've heard who's actually said that they had a problem with that sound. Yeah,
they're a danger to me. And everywhere I go, I always get disoriented by them and by loud sounds. Even by fire trucks, I get disoriented by them.
When I was in FT Park,
that fuzzball that's lying on the floor next to me, he's looking around for the bird instead of crossing the street because he's just not familiar. And he hears the chirp and he's looking around and I'm like, get across. So there are some weaknesses to it, as there is with every system.
Yes.
What we've done, and I confess to say, I don't have the information from Ed Newberg as to where, I know the report that Joe and his committee put together is it supposed to be in the hands of city departments. It's a question of getting city department to make a date when we all sit down and talk about this. The other piece, of course, having to do at the same time, we're looking at talking signs as well for the city and county of Denver. So, but I've told everybody, go ahead with the audible signal, because by the time everybody gets around to making a decision, we may have some information about talking signs, and it's not really...
The cost of talking signs, if my recollection is right, and I've talked with Ward Bond, each transmitter, each sign, costs approximately $2,500.
Yeah, that's the problem with it. Right?
Yeah.
I can't believe it in the advancement of technology that we have today, that there isn't a handheld device or even a thing to put on your belt buckle that doesn't read the light and tell you which way to go. I mean, there's so many simpler ways to have something for assistance than the primitive way they're trying to do it.
Yeah.
It's sort of like taking the technology of a 47 Ford and deciding to make it, because it was a real nice car back then, let's make it now and make it mandatory when we've advanced so much further.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a lot better technology than when those first Cuckoo and Chirp systems were put out there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Isn't it my understanding, Jeff, that Japan has come out with a headset, something that's built here, and it gives that information at will?
That's possible. I haven't looked into that area that much. I'm mostly looking at what technology
is here.
It
really would seem to me, to look into advanced technology, what's going to be here 5 years from now, instead of waiting 10 years to have all this primitive stuff installed at a horrendous price. And I grant you that it's not a horrendous price in the token of the bill that goes forward for an intersection. That is a portion of it. But it does seem to me that there is something more advanced available, or just almost available, that we could look into.
Well, let me put it this way. As an information specialist with the ADA, my job is not to figure out the technology. My job is essentially to say that there is a requirement under Title II to provide equal effective communication to people who are blind or visually impaired. Whatever methodology you want to come up with to do that, I believe that at every intersection where you have traffic lights, you have an obligation to provide equal effective communication to people who are blind. If you want to do that with handing everybody a GPS locator that, you know, they can pick up the information off a satellite as they approach the intersections, that would be wonderful. That would be a lot safer. If you had GPS locators that could tell somebody that the number 7 bus is 2 blocks down and it'll be here in 30 seconds, that would be wonderful.
How much are we getting out of the training of our service animals?
Well,
disagreeing with what you want to do.
Yeah.
I just want to know if there's something else.
Well, service animals are only good for obstacle detection, curb detection. They route you around things and having intelligent disobedience, but they are not a self-guidance system.
No.
You have to know where you're going. You got to know what you're doing.
Right.
Not all elements of that animal can predict all of the environment. So service animals do assist in some way, but also there is a need for technology to be implemented in order to finish that.
And only a small percentage of people who are blind or visually impaired are using service animals.
Well, I understand that. Yeah. And I know there's having coached blind skiers for a long time, I know the service dogs vary as much as wives do. You know, whether they're good cooks or bad cooks.
Interesting way of putting
it. Just that one.
Yeah. The thing that I will argue is that, you know, I don't know exactly what the solution is. a big issue is, for instance, okay, I have friends who've lived in Colorado Springs all their lives. Colorado Springs has got a really screwy street system, but they know, the neighborhoods they know, they can go through with a white cane, they can walk just as fast as I can walk through those neighborhoods, okay? The thing is, I can get off a plane in Chicago, D.C., New York City, and I can pretty much negotiate my way through. I, you know, can figure out what walk signs are, don't walk signs, et cetera, et cetera. And I can find my way around a big city fairly easily, and I'm safe. There's no reason with the technology we have available that we can't give somewhat comparable access to those places to somebody who gets off a plane and just happens to be blind.
I mean, agree with you completely.
You know, I mean, that you know, the fact that we've put curb ramps there that for a lot of people have taken away a primary cue as to where they were going to enter into an unsafe area. And we've, you know, detectable warnings were out there for the battle for about 8 years. Now they're an enforceable standard. But a lot of places they're used improperly or inaccurately. And, you know, they're not any good if they're not really defining what they're supposed to be defining. Mm-hmm. And likewise, I'll agree, if you put in, if you're going to put in a system of audible traffic signals in the city of Denver, I would recommend that they work on an on-demand basis. I would recommend that whatever system you use, you go with it consistently and, you know, use the same system every place.
When we did curb cuts back when the money was real scarce, mm-hmm. we started out by analyzing where we thought the most use would go for the dollar. Mm-hmm. Would you be of the same agreement that whatever the decision is for the equipment
yeah.
be implemented as to the largest of needs to the, down towards the lesser needs?
I would certainly recommend it on that basis, that it would be, you know, like a transition plan where you would pick, you know, key locations. Obviously, it wouldn't be a bad idea to survey people in the blind community and find out what areas they have particular issues with. I know that intersections where you've got more than a standard four-way, you know, four streets in a square intersection are much more challenging. If you've got right turn flare-outs, those corners are extremely difficult. If you've got streets with a number of lanes to cross and heavy traffic, yeah, those would be certainly logically the first places you'd want to go. I mean, I don't think you'd find a couple of residential side streets that happen to have a traffic light, and that'd be the first place you'd go and put these in, unless you were doing it as a test.